The Canaanites had been a particular problem for Israel until what we read about in our last passage, in which case they were pretty much taken out of the scene. They were no more an organized force to be reckoned with, although their spiritual legacy remained. Now this week, we have a different foe, a different group that rises up in order to cause trouble for the Jewish people. Not because of happenstance, but because of the way the Jewish people were acting. Judges chapter 6, starting in verse 1. Then the sons of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord gave them into the hands of Midian 7 years. This is that sad, sad story in the book of Judges. So much like our modern day that we see that they would be living righteously for a number of years, that God would bring upon them blessings, and then in the blessings they relaxed, they got careless, they started to mingle more with the Canaanites, with the other pagan peoples of the land, in this case the Midianites. And so as a result, since they did evil and they walked away from God in the way they were living and the things they were doing and even really the things that they were believing, that God would bring judgment upon them in order to bring them back to understanding who He was. Verse 2, the power of Midian prevailed against Israel. Because of Midian, the sons of Israel made for themselves the dens which were in the mountains and the caves and the strongholds. It's not exactly sure what these dens were. Caves, caverns, other kinds of places, fortresses, places that they could hide. Verse 3, for it was when Israel had sown that the Midianites would come up with the Amalekites and the sons of the east and go against them, so that they would camp against them and destroy the produce of the earth as far as Gaza and leave no sustenance in Israel, as well as no sheep, ox, or donkey. They would come up with their livestock and their tents, and they would come in like locusts for number. Both they and their camels were innumerable. They came into the land and devastated it. So how awful that was, that Israel would take the time to sow their crops, to tend their crops, take care of their cattle, and just when it's ready to harvest it, here come the Midianites with their camels. They would come running through it. And I presume they would not only devastate it, destroy it, but they would also take what they wanted for themselves and leave the Jewish people with nothing. Verse 6, so Israel is brought very low because of Midian, and the sons of Israel cried to the Lord. Ah, and there you go. They are finally at the point where they are returning to God. Verse 7, now it came about when the sons of Israel cried to the Lord on account of Midian, that the Lord sent a prophet to the sons of Israel, and he said to them, thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, it was I who brought you up from Egypt and brought you out from the house of slavery. I delivered you from the hands of the Egyptians and from the hands of all your oppressors, and dispossessed them before you and gave you their land. I said to you, I am the Lord your God. You shall not fear the gods of the Amorites in whose land you live, but you have not obeyed me. So first the prophet came and explained to them in clear terms why this was happening. It was because that they have turned, they have fallen from God. And God, the prophet began with the reputation of God saying, look, don't sweat it. God has done this before with a lot bigger enemy than you have right now. He took care of Egypt, so he can take care of these Midianites. A prophet was not enough. Verse 11, then the angel of the Lord came and sat under the oak that was in Ophrah, which belonged to Joash the Abiezrite, as his son Gideon was beating out wheat in the winepress in order to save it from the Midianites. A lot of interesting things going on in that verse. First of all, it wasn't a prophet at this point. It was the angel of the Lord. It was not an angel of the Lord. You have to be, it's very specific in Scripture when the angel of the Lord shows up. We think of angel almost like a species of creature that you could look in a book and see angel characteristics, you know, average height, average weight, etc., etc. But the Hebrew is not that clear. Angel is more or less a messenger or even almost a manifestation. So in this case, when it talks about the angel of the Lord, you'll see certain characteristics of the angel of the Lord that are not true of generic angels, that generally when the angel of the Lord appears, he speaks as if he were God himself. He speaks on behalf of God. People who see him are generally recognizing that, yes, they have had a manifestation of God here, and generally that the angel of the Lord does not give his name. When other angels appear, sometimes they give their name and sometimes they don't. Verse 12. Oh, and the other interesting things about this passage is that Gideon was beating out wheat in the wine press. Why in the world would he beat out wheat in the wine press? Why wouldn't he beat out wheat in the wheat press? Well, the wine press was in the basement. It was a cool hole in the ground because you didn't want the grapes to be out in the hot sun and to be, you know, to be damaged by the sun. So you had your wine press somewhere secluded. So Gideon was hiding somewhere, probably in the basement, beating out his wheat in the wine press. Not exactly the hallmark of a valiant hero, but they were doing all they could to try to save something from the Midianites. Verse 12, the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, "The Lord is with you, O valiant warrior." Now, Gideon was not exactly acting like a valiant warrior at that time. And we will see in some of the actions of Gideon that he does not start off as valiant warrior, but rather timid as far as warriors is concerned. And so we're going to see that God does not see him as he was, but God sees him as he ought to be, as in the power of God that he could be. And I think oftentimes God looks at us that way, not as we are, but as we ought to be and as we will be, as he works does his work in us. Verse 13, then Gideon said to him, "O my Lord," and notice that he is still calling him by Lord, lowercase. He's just speaking to him like you would speak to just someone who was rather distinguished, like you would treat someone with honor. You would say, like we would call somebody sir. It's just generic. "O my Lord, if the Lord," capital Lord, the name, proper name of God, "is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all his miracles, which our fathers told us about, saying, 'Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt?' But now the Lord has abandoned us and given us into the hand of Midian." So Gideon is hearkening back to the words of the prophet. The prophet said that he delivered them from the land of Egypt. And so Gideon says, "All right, show me the goods." God delivered the people from Egypt, but now, where is he? Things are going from bad to worse. Here I am hiding in the basement. Verse 14, the Lord, and once again, here we go, we have this ambiguity that it's not the angel of the Lord, but now the Lord looked at him and said, "Go in this your strength and deliver Israel from the hand of Midian. Have I not sent you?" He said to him, "O Lord, how shall I deliver Israel? Behold, my family is the least in Manasseh, and I am the youngest in my father's house." Shades of King David, right? Verse 16, but the Lord said to him, "Surely I will be with you, and you shall defeat Midian as one man." As one man, meaning that they shall fall at once. So Gideon said to him, "If now I have found favor in your sight, then show me a sign that it is you who speak with me." So he didn't know who this guy was. Guy could have been some kook down the road. Some nutcase, thought he was God. He wants some sign, some proof. Verse 18, please do not depart from here until I come back to you and bring out my offering and lay it before you. And then he said, I will remain until you return. Then Gideon went in and prepared a young goat and unleavened bread from an ephah of flour. He put the meat in a basket and the broth in a pot and brought them out to him under the oak and presented them. So this was not a 5-minute meal. It was probably a couple of hours to do all this. The angel of God said to him, take the meat and the unleavened bread and lay them on this rock and pour out the broth. And he did so. Then the angel of the Lord put out the end of the staff that was in his hand and touched the meat and the unleavened bread, and fire sprang up from the rock and consumed the meat and the unleavened bread. Then the angel of the Lord vanished from his sight. Poof! When Gideon saw that he was the angel of the Lord, he said, alas, O Lord God, for now I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face. The Lord said to him, peace to you, do not fear, you shall not die. Then Gideon built an altar there to the Lord and named it, the Lord is peace. To this day, namely the day of the writing of this part of Judges, it is still an Ophrah of the Abiezrites. Now on the same night, the Lord said to him, take your father's bull and a second bull 7 years old, and then pull down the altar of Baal, which belongs to your father, and cut down the Asherah that is beside it. Built an altar to the Lord your God on the top of this stronghold in an orderly manner, and take a second bull and offer a burnt offering with the wood of the Asherah, which you shall cut down. Then Gideon took 10 men of his servants and did as the Lord had spoken to him. And because he was too afraid of his father's household and the men of the city to do it by day, he did it by night. Like I said, valiant warrior? Not yet. Verse 28, when the men of the city arose early in the morning, behold, the altar of Baal was torn down, and the Asherah which was beside it was cut down, and the second bull was offered on the altar which had been built. They said to one another, who did this thing? And when they searched about and inquired, they said, Gideon, the son of Joash, did this thing. Then the men of the city said to Joash, bring out your son that he may die. For he has torn down the altar of Baal, and indeed he has cut down the Asherah which was beside it. Blasphemy! Blasphemy against Baal. But Joash said to all who stood against him, will you contend for Baal, or will you deliver him? Whoever will plead for him shall be put to death by morning. If he is a god, let him contend for himself, because someone has torn down his altar. In other words, let the god handle it. You believe in Baal? You think he says tough? Huh? You think he's tough? Well, let him take care of the guy who tore down his altar and took down the Asherah. Therefore, on that day, he named him Jerubbabel, that is to say, let Baal contend against him, because he had torn down his altar. And all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the sons of the east assembled themselves, and they crossed over and camped in the valley of Jezreel. So the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon, and he blew a trumpet, and the Abiezrites were called together to follow him. So it's sort of interesting that God didn't call Gideon to lead the people into battle before Gideon had this little battle all by himself, and that he could see how God took him through this little battle to the point where God was developing him into a valiant warrior. Verse 35, he sent messengers throughout Manasseh, and they also were called together to follow him. And he sent messengers to Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali, and they came up to meet him. Then Gideon said to God, if you will deliver Israel through me as you have spoken, behold, I will put a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. If there is dew on the fleece only, and it is dry on all the ground, then I will know that you will deliver Israel through me as you have spoken. I would have thought by this time it was a little late for this, but Gideon needed some assurance from God. I mean, he had already had the visit from the angel of the Lord, so he should at this point have known that God was behind him. Verse 38, and it was so. When he arose early the next morning and squeezed the fleece, he drained the dew from the fleece, a bowl full of water. And Gideon said to God, do not let your anger burn against me that I may speak once more. Please let me make a test once more with the fleece. Let it now be dry only on the fleece, and let there be dew on all the ground. It could have been something about the fleece. You know, sometimes maybe the fleece just by its nature was going to get wet. So he said, okay, God, you proved that this was a miracle. Let's reverse it. God did so that night, for it was dry only on the fleece, and dew was on all the ground. So I am impressed by the fact that God honored Gideon's hesitation, that God took Gideon to the point where he was really developed into that valiant warrior, that he didn't start there, that he took, God took him there step by step, that he would learn to depend upon God, that he would learn the power of God, that he would learn to do things God's way. I think about that in our life, that God doesn't, you know, you're thinking, oh, God's going to ask me to do something awful, something really high and wonderful, and I just can't do that. Well, he's not going to ask you to do something that you can't do. And anything that God has you to do, he will prepare you for. Chapter 7. Then Zerubbabel, that is Gideon, and all the people who were with him, rose early and camped beside the spring of Harod. And the camp of Midian was on the north side of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley. And the Lord said to Gideon, the people who are with you are too many for me to give Midian into their hands, for Israel will become boastful, saying, my own power has delivered me. If I were Gideon, I would say, excuse me, God, we got a bad connection here. I thought you just said that there were too many people. How can you have too many people in your army? Verse 3. Now therefore, come proclaim in the hearing of the people, saying, whoever is afraid and trembling, let him return and depart from Mount Gilead. So 22,000 people returned, but 10,000 remained. So two-thirds of his army was scared. I don't blame God for saying, let him go. Right? You don't want to lead people into battle that are scared, afraid and trembling at this point. I mean, there's just some fear to going into battle, but these people were trembling. They were about to lose it. So Gideon said, if you're scared, go home. So two-thirds of his army went home. Verse 4. Then the Lord said to Gideon, the people are still too many. I'm sure Gideon said, you're kidding, right? Bring them down to the water, and I will test them for you there. Therefore it shall be that he of whom I say to you, this one shall go with you, he shall go with you. But everyone of whom I say to you, this one shall not go with you, he shall not go. So he brought the people down to the water. And the Lord said to Gideon, you shall separate everyone who laps the water with his tongue as a dog laps, as well as everyone who kneels to drink. And the number of those who lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, was 300 men, but all the rest of the people kneeled to drink water. The Lord said to Gideon, I will deliver you with the 300 men who lapped, and will give the Midianites into your hands, so that all the other people go, each man to his home. And it doesn't really go into, I've read some things and I've heard some things about, well, the people who lapped were careful and all the rest of it, but it's really, the language of this is rather uncertain as to what exactly what they were doing. But to go from an army of 30,000 down to an army of 300, that was rather remarkable. That was only one out of every 100 people that they started with. So 99 out of 100 people were dismissed, and they were left with this little band, which might have been looking around at each other and saying, okay, there better be a pretty good plan for this one. Because remember, these Midianites, tough dudes, camels, Israel had been trying to deal with them for 7 years and had been ineffective. So now we've got 300, down to 300 men. Verse 8, so 300 men took the people's provisions and their trumpets into their hands. Gideon sent all the other men of Israel, each to his tent, but retained the 300 men, and the camp of Midian was below him in the valley. Now notice something about this, he sent these men, each man to his tent. And so the implication there is that they're starting to head home, not tend to the army, but head home. So I just picture these guys gathering up their armor and their swords and whatnot and starting to break camp. Now on the same night it came about, the Lord said to him, arise, go down against the camp, for I have given it into your hands. But if you're afraid to go down, once again, God is meeting Gideon where he was. Afraid to go down, go with Purah, your servant, down into the camp, and you'll hear what they say. And afterward, your hands will be strengthened, that you may go down against the camp. So he went with Purah, his servant, down to the outposts of the army that was in the camp. Now the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the sons of the east were lying in the valley as numerous as locusts, and their camels were without number, as numerous as the sand on the seashore. When Gideon came, behold, a man was relating a dream to his friend, and he said, "Behold, I had a dream. A loaf of barley bread was tumbling into the camp of Midian. And it came to the tent, and it struck it, so that it fell, and turned it upside down, so that the tent lay flat." His friend replied, "This is nothing less than the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, the man of Israel. God has given Midian and all the camp into his hand." So this is the hand of God of all these thousands of people that are in the camp. Gideon goes down the hill into the camp, and who does he hear but the guy who had the dream that illustrates that God is putting the camp of Midian into his hands. When Gideon heard the account of the dream and its interpretation, he bowed in worship. He returned to the camp of Israel and said, "Arise, for the Lord has given the camp of Midian into your hands." He divided the 300 men into three companies, so 100 each. And he put trumpets and empty pitchers into the hands of all of them, with torches inside the pitchers. So he had a torch, it's covered over with a pitcher, the bowl. And their pitchers were not these little tiny things, it was a big thing. So he put a pitcher over the torch so you couldn't see it. He said to them, "Look at me and do likewise, and behold, when I come to the outskirts of the camp, do as I do. When I and all who are with me blow the trumpet, then you also blow the trumpets all around the camp and say, 'For the Lord and for Gideon.'" So Gideon and the 100 men who were with him came to the outskirts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, when they had just posted the watch, and they blew the trumpets and smashed the pitchers that were in their hands. This is the middle of the night, middle of the watch, the very middle of the night. The new watch had just come on, so they were still a little sleepy and groggy. The old watch was just starting to go back to sleep, so they weren't exactly with it either. So picture this quiet Middle Eastern night. Maybe a little bit of camel noises, but other than that, no noise in the camp. Some snoring coming from here and there. Nothing much going on. And all of a sudden, smash, bang, and then the shofar is blowing all over the place. You know, dozens of shofars, maybe even hundreds of shofars, all blowing at the same time, and people yelling, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." Verse 21, three companies blew their trumpets and broke the pitchers. They held the torches in their left hands, and the trumpets in their right hands were blowing, and cried, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon!" And then blew the shofar. Each stood in his place around the camp, and all the army ran, crying out as they fled. What a way to wake up at night. So they thought they were under attack. They thought that it was a night attack, and so they had to do something. So they all pulled out their swords and did something, but what they did was battle each other. Verse 22, when they blew 300 trumpets, the Lord set the sword of one against the other, even throughout the whole army. And the army fled as far as Beth Shittah, towards Zerarah, as far as the edge of Abel Mehalah by Tabat. The men of Israel were summoned from Naphtali and Asher and all Manasseh, and they pursued Midian. So here this great army that Midian had sent home now had something to do, because here they have all these Midianites, not as a battle, but fleeing through their midst. Gideon sent messengers through all the hill country of Ephraim, saying, "Come down against Midian and take the waters before them as far as Beth Barah and the Jordan." So all the men of Ephraim were summoned, and they took the waters as far as Beth Barah and the Jordan. They captured the two leaders of Midian, Oreb and Zeeb, and they killed Oreb at the rock of Oreb, and they killed Zeeb at the winepress of Zeeb, while they pursued Midian, and they brought the heads of Oreb and Zeeb to Gideon from across the Jordan. And at this point, the Midianites, as an organized force, as a nation, pretty much drop out of history. This is a total rout of the army of Midian. So that they're no longer a problem for Israel. So what can we see here? A lot of stuff are going on here. I love the fact that God looks at Gideon's army and says, nope, too big. Got to cut that down. And I'm sure Gideon was thinking, well, what are you thinking, God? What are you thinking? That to us becomes really an something to ponder. Because God whittled down Gideon's army to the point where it was small, but he didn't eliminate it completely. Gideon still had to have the faith to take on this mighty army with these 300 men. These 300 men had to have the faith to believe that God was able to deliver them from the Midianites with this little band. Sometimes in my life, I struggle with how big an army to use, how much to start trimming down armies, or how much to go forward. And that shows up in a lot of places. It shows up with this congregation itself. It's like, how much does God desire for us to do as far as outreach, as far as promotional sorts of things? It happens in other endeavors, in my writing, in other places. It's like, you want God to be God. You want it to be known that God is the one who did it, and not you. But yet, God still uses us, just like he used Gideon. Sometimes he sends us in with what we would consider to be inadequate backup. But if God has truly sent you, then that's really the only backup that you need, is God. You don't need anybody to take your back, because God's got your back. But just like Gideon, God takes us through places to prepare us for the big task at hand, so that the only way really to fail is to disobey God in whatever way. It could be not taking on the ministry, or taking on the assignment, rather. The assignment might be ministry, might be other things. It could also be that our lives are not pure anymore, or not as pure as sinful people can be, but that there is some sort of sin or evil there. And when we have some sin or evil there, then we are not going to prevail. We're not going to prevail. We're not going to succeed. It also means that we get our right perspective on what the objective of the battle is. The objective of the battle is not that each and every one of us should be absurdly prosperous and happy in every way in this life, but the aim of the battle is that God's kingdom should be carried forth. And sometimes that means that the kingdom of this world suffers quite a bit in our lives. And so we shouldn't judge our successes by, you know, how the worldly success, but rather by how well things of God are going, how much God gives us success in his ways. But God is a mighty God. Sometimes his solutions are surprising. His ways are not our ways. His thoughts are not our thoughts. Just like with Gideon, he came up with this amazing plan for Gideon, that entire huge army became a liability as they fought themselves rather than fighting Gideon. And sometimes we look around us at the armies around us and say, oh, that's just too big. But there's that cliche, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. That's true when God is on your side, because in this case it was the size of the army which was the problem. The Midianite army, because they started attacking each other. Let's pray. Dearest God and Father, enable us to have a clear idea of what you're calling us to do and whom you're calling us to be, so that we might be faithful. May we constantly have clear perspective on your kingdom versus the kingdom of this world, that we might be able to go in the right direction, and that we might be unhindered by sin, so that we might glorify your name, and that we might lift up that precious name of our Messiah, Yeshua. Amen.